Give him a big hand.
Thank you. I hope that everyone's been enjoying the conference and convention, and I hope that that you will find the next few hours to be really informative and enjoyable. Right now I am trying to find my notes. But the first thing that we would have is remembrances from any. We'd like to hear about any of our members who have passed away since the last conference and convention. So if there's anyone you would like to bring to our attention about the passing, if you could stand up, and somebody will come and wave your hand, and somebody will come up. Ed will get you the microphone.
It is with very deep sadness that I tell you that a very, very person of our family has gone, has passed away. She was one of many who started the Earl Baum Center of the Blind in Santa Rosa, California. And I don't know if a lot of you know that she was a veteran. She was a member of the United States Air Force. And she was a OR nurse. And when the Oklahoma bombing happened, she was part of the triage team. And she was very, very supportive of the California Council of the Blind. When she was in her convalescent home bed, she had a roommate that was needing a piece of equipment that was not being given to her, and she got on the phone and started giving the people one side up and down the other. In a few hours, the person had the piece of equipment. And she told me that she was looking very forward to flying down here with me to this convention. She was very active in pedestrian safety in Santa Rosa, California. She helped get many, many accessible signals put in that town. And she was very close to me and many others in Santa Rosa. And she went to sleep one night and didn't wake up the next morning. She passed away on September 11th. And she has told me many times that she loved every one of you people here. And I am putting forward to my chapter that at our next meeting that we make September 11th Barrel Brown Day for the rest of the Redwood Empire Council of Blind. Thank you.
I don't see any other hands.
No others?
Oh, one right here.
Okay.
I'd like to remember one more member.
Yes, please.
Ruby Hernandez from the East Los Angeles chapter died earlier this year. So in memory of her.
That's it?
I don't see any other hands.
Okay, then. Let's give a moment of silence in memory of these members who have passed away. Okay, thank you very much. Next is our credentials report, and our chair, Pamela. I'm having a problem finding my agenda, but Pamela, could you please come and give your report?
Can you guys hear me? Oh, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and present the credentials. And before I do that, just if you'll indulge me for just a second, I've been going through a really bad time. And I wasn't really sure if I could make it here. But so I'm going to do the very best I can. I may have to tweak a couple of things from this morning. Some of the changes that came at me, like several curveballs, but I'll get through this, and I want to do this with the promise to you that I'll do everything I can to improve for next time. And if you'll please bear with me, I thank you very much. Thank you, Pedro. Okay. We start with the ACB Capital Chapter, President Deborah Thompson, Delegate Jeff Tom, Alternate Delegate Linda O'Neill. Number of members is 44, and they have 9 votes. Next, we have the Active Blind Inland Valleys Chapter. President Irene Nunez, Delegate Irene Nunez, Alternate Delegate Nellie Emerson. Number of chapter members is 14. And they have 5 votes. Next is the Alameda County Chapter. President is Katrina McCurdy. Delegate is Katrina McCurdy. Alternate is none. Number of chapter members is 12. They also have 5 votes. Trying to catch my breath, you guys. Antelope Valley did not attend. Association for Multicultural Concerns, President Lillian Scafey, Delegate Teddy Joy Rimhill, Alternate none. It's a special affiliate, number of members 50, but special affiliate 5 votes. Bayview Chapter, President Mike Kastner, President Mike Kastner, Delegate Steve Fort, Alternate Delegate Sally McGuire. Number of chapter members is 46, and they have 9 votes. Rail Revival League of California, President Steve Ford, Delegate Keith Johnson, Alternate none. Number of chapter members is 49. It's a special affiliate, so there's 5 votes. Excuse me. Butte County Council of the Blind is not attending. California Council of Blind Students, President Lena Bandy Dawes, Delegate Lena Dawes, Alternate Lisa Cushman, number of members 14, special affiliate 5 votes. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, President Bernice Kandarian, Delegate Donna Sanchez, Alternate Delegate Dan Smith. Number of members is 9-0, and Special Affiliate, they have 5 votes. California Library Users of California, President Judy Wilkinson, Delegate Judy Wilkinson, Alternate None, number of members 39, it's a Special Interest Affiliate, they have 5 votes. let's see here. Coachella Valley Chapter, President Linda Samalski, Delegate Linda Samalski, Alternate Delegate Melissa Rowe, number of members 13, and they have 5 votes. Comden Chapter, President Michael Williams, Delegate Michael Williams, Alternate Delegate is Jeffrey Sims, number of chapter members is 49, and they have 10 votes, and I really want to congratulate them. They worked really hard to get here. Thank you guys very much. I was a nag. They got here. Contra Costa Chapter, President Gabe Griffith, Delegate Gabe Griffith, Alternate Delegate Vita Zavoli, number of chapter members is 18, and they have 5 votes. East Los Angeles Chapter, President Luis Herrera, Delegate Luis Herrera, Alternate Delegate is Marie Herrera, number of members is 35, and they have 7 votes. Excuse me. Okay. Glendale Burbank Chapter, President Artis Bazin, Delegate Anthony Signorello, Alternate is Artis Bazin. Number of chapter members is 28, and they have 6 votes. Golden Gate Chapter, President Dr. Martin Jones, Delegate Warren Cushman, Alternate is none, number of chapter members is 24, and they have 5 votes. Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind, President Penny Valdivinos, Delegate John Ross, Alternate none, number of chapter members is 21, they have 5 votes. Greater Long Beach Chapter, President Michael Conrad, Delegate Robert Wendt, no alternate, and number of chapter members is 25, and they have 5 votes. Greater Los Angeles Chapter, President Pamela Metz, Delegate Pamela Metz, alternate, Delegate is Abby Schumann. Number of chapter members is 23, and they have 5 votes. Now, Greater San Joaquin Chapter, I did not have a response from them. I don't know if they're here. So as of this morning, I didn't have any. Okay, hearing no response, I'll go ahead and move on. Guide Dog Users of California, President Mary Beth Randall, Delegate Ken Metz, Alternate None, number of chapter members is 29. It's a special affiliate. They have 5 votes. High Desert Chapter not attending. Humboldt Chapter is not attending. Let's see. Okay, Inland Empire Chapter. I didn't have any response this morning. Is there anyone here from the Inland Empire Chapter? No one here? Okay, no response. I'm going to move on.
Orange County Chapter, President Andrea Pitzenberger, Delegate Debbie Kessler, Alternate Gail Crossan. Number of chapter members is 24, and they have 5 votes. Orientation Center for the Blind Alumni Association did not report to me, and did, yes? Yes. Yes, I know, but he was not here this morning, and he overslept, and he did not contact me. So I'll leave it up to you guys, but I mean, it's up to you guys what you want me to do with it, but I mean, I didn't get any kind of contact. I contacted him this afternoon to find out what happened.
Any discussion? Okay, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions? Okay, the ayes have it.
Okay, I would just suggest that you guys, if you can, please let me know if something happens and you can't be there. Call me, especially you have, you know, Albert, you have my contact info. Call me and let me know sometime during that day or before, whenever you can, because it really makes it difficult and it's not fair to everyone who is on time. Okay, I'm sorry. So it's President Judy Wilkinson, Delegate Albert Contreras, Alternate Nunn. Number of members is 19, is special affiliate, 5 votes. Randolph Shepherd, Vendors of California. President Vidhanlon, Delegate Vidhanlon, Alternate Nunn. Number of chapter members is 13, special affiliate is 5 votes. Redwood Empire Council Chapter, President Larry Hall, Delegate Bill Gillespie, Alternate Delegate is none. Number of chapter members is 50. They have 10 votes. San Bernardino Chapter, President Theodore Wilbrecht, Delegate Theodore Wilbrecht, Alternate Delegate Huey Carpenter. Number of chapter members is 68. They have 14 votes. San Diego Braille Club Chapter, President George Drain, Delegate Joe Lopez, Alternate Delegate Monique McCorley. Number of chapter members is 40, and they have 8 votes. San Diego Chapter, President is Larry Freeman. Thank you. Delegate is Doug Martin. Alternate Delegate is Patty Davis. Number of chapter members is 22, and they have 5 votes. San Francisco Chapter is President Linda Porrell, Delegate Linda Porrell, Alternate Delegate Frank Welty. Number of chapter members is 35, and they have 7 votes. San Gabriel Valley Chapter, President Pamela Apology, Delegate Vincent Calderon, Alternate Delegate is Mitch Pomerantz. Number of chapter members is 52, and they have 10 votes. San Mateo County Chapter is not attending. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind Chapter is, President is Rob Turner, Delegate is Roger Peterson, Alternate Delegate is Rob Turner. Number of chapter members is 100. And they have 20 votes. Okay. Solano Blind Club. So I'm sorry, Solano Adult Blind Club chapter. And I didn't hear from them. Is anyone here? No hearing, no response? No one's here? Okay. I tried. Then we have the City Gateway chapter. President John Gasper, Delegate John Gasper, Alternate Delegate Tammy Stevens. Number of chapter members is 25, and they have 5 votes. And that concludes the chapter accounting.
Thank you. Okay, well, I entertain a motion to approve the credentials report. Okay. Got any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions? Okay. Thank you, Pamela. Thank you very much for your report.
Could I just ask you guys, if you could, if you guys find out that there's a change in your credentials, delegate or alternate or anything, and you know this before the convention, if you could either give Ed a call or myself a call, I'm going to list my telephone number, is 626-445-7297. And it's really helpful if we have the correct information ahead of time. It helps me and it helps you because I can get done faster and you guys will be rid of me. So if you guys have that, you know, if you cannot wait to the convention, it would be helpful. If you don't know before that, I understand. But if you could, it would really be helpful. And maybe I can make this work more smoothly for you guys. And I thank you for your time and attention. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We are a little ahead in our schedule, and just what I'd like to do is see if before we have our presentations, if there's any announcements that anyone would like to make before we get started. I think I first heard Bernice.
I'm sorry, I walked in late. No matter how hard I try to be on time, my slow back doesn't get me there. I don't know if during the memorial session anybody mentioned the fact that the American Council of Blind past president Leroy Saunders passed away recently.
No, Bernice. I just heard about it the other day, yes. Okay, there were other people wanting to make announcements.
Thank you, Gene.
Go ahead.
This is Peter Pardini, co-chair of the exhibit room. Really like to encourage people to stop by and visit our exhibitors tomorrow morning. The exhibit room will be open to the public from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. So please stop by and see our fantastic exhibitors. And I'd really like to thank our exhibitors for exhibiting at our convention. My second announcement is there's still meal tickets available for the meals for tomorrow. So please stop by the registration CCB registration desk. The desk is open from 9 to 3. So we got all the meals are available tomorrow. The exhibit hall's on lower level in the Rancho Santa Fe room, and
it's where all the noise comes from.
We should have plenty of sighted guides to help you guys tomorrow find them. We have the most volunteers tomorrow.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Any other announcements?
I have one over here.
I'm not sure how hard I have to remind people this, because we seem to like the hospitality room. But remember, the San Diego Braille Club will be having the hospitality room. And for those who don't know where it is, if you go by the elevators, if the elevator's on your right, it's slightly forward and to your left as they head towards the bar for the hotel.
One more.
Hello, this is, okay, there we go. This is Lena Dawes. I would just like to remind everyone and let those know who don't, we have raffle tickets for the students, the CCBS raffle. There are 4 great prizes, including a $75 cash prize. So artist Lisa and I know have tickets. So come see any of us. They're $1 a piece or 6 for $5. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Madam President.
I would just like to let people know that we have sweepstakes tickets still for sale, and they are $5 a piece. First prize is an iPad. Second prize is a $500 Lane Bryant gift card that can also be used at Catherine's. Third prize is a $200 Target gift card. And the next prize is a $100 Walmart gift card. And we received this past weekend a donation from a member who said, oh, there needs to be a cash prize too. So thanks to the generosity of Mike Keithley, we have a $100 cash prize as well. So remember, you need to buy your sweepstakes tickets, $5 a piece, before the banquet. You don't need to be at the banquet to be present. You don't need to be at the banquet. You don't need to be present at the banquet. I'm so tired. You know, I need to go get some fudge. Somebody gave me some fudge. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna.
Excuse me. Who do we see about those tickets?
Okay, you can purchase sweepstakes tickets at the registration desk.
Ah.
You can purchase tickets from me, from artists,
okay,
from
everyone.
Jeff.
Shh.
Thank you.
So see any of us, and you can purchase them from us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
At the CCB table in the exhibit room as well, Peter said. Thank you for that reminder.
Does our chair from Resolutions want to make an announcement?
Well, I can do it when I come.
Okay. Okay, so let's... next. We're very honored this evening to have Dr. Henry A. Ferrara from the University of California, San Diego Department of Ophthalmology, the Shiley Eye Center. He is an assistant clinical professor with the university. I'm going to say a few comments about him, but like all our other presenters, we have Vitas on them, and they're in the back of the program, so you can get more information about him and the others. But Dr. Ferrara has an extensive background in retinal disorders, and this evening he's going to be talking about many of them, but particularly diabetic retinopathy. Thank you. Thank you. And he has, again, he has a very diverse clinical interest in retinal disorders and is a very active researcher. As busy as he is, he believes very strongly in giving back to the community. And what he is doing right now, he's a mentor to underrepresented students who are interested in pursuing medical careers. He may even talk about a little bit of this evening about the work he is doing and bringing these young people into the medical profession. So let's give him a hand and welcome.
I want to say thank you to the California Council of the Blind for the invitation. I'm truly honored to be here. Today what I'm primarily going to speak about is diabetic macular edema. And before we address this very important topic, I need to provide a little bit of background. Of course, many of the audience here probably knows a lot about it. The first thing I want to disclose is I have been a consultant for the company Thrombogenics, but it does not apply to today's talk. So diabetes, what is diabetes? Well, diabetes is a metabolic disorder. It is the inability of the body to process glucose from the bloodstream. There are two primary types of diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is due to a lack of the hormone insulin. The hormone insulin is what regulates the uptake or the removal of sugar from your bloodstream after you eat. More commonly, patients have type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes is caused by the inability of the body to respond to insulin. So patients that have type 2 diabetes, they make insulin, but the body's not properly responding to insulin, so therefore sugar levels become very elevated. So why is diabetes why is it a problem? It's a chronic disorder, and there is no cure for it, so it has to be managed. And with chronic hyperglycemia or chronic elevated blood sugar levels, there are complications such as kidney failure, neuropathy, which is damage to the peripheral nerves, and of course, diabetic retinopathy. How significant is it? Well, it's estimated there are approximately 25.8 million Americans that have diabetes. That's about 8.3% of the population. Currently, it's estimated that about 18.8 million are diagnosed, but there are about 7 million that are undiagnosed. Currently, diabetes is the leading cause of blindness among adults between 20 to 74 years of age. For adults above 70, it's macular degeneration. And in between 2005 and 2008, about 4.2 million patients with diabetes had diabetic retinopathy. So what is diabetic retinopathy? Diabetic retinopathy is damage to the blood vessels caused by chronically elevated blood sugar levels. So the specific mechanism still remains to be elucidated, but it is thought that these chronic levels initiate damage to the capillaries, so the microvasculature, and the first signs is something called a microaneurysm, and that's significant for diabetic macular edema, which I'll discuss in a moment. Over time, there's damage to the small blood vessels that feed the retina, so the capillary bed gets destroyed, and with the loss of the capillary bed, there's ischemia. Ischemia simply means there's insufficient blood flow and oxygen, and portions of the retina are starving for oxygen. Over time, this initiates the development of abnormal blood vessels and scar tissue, which can lead to a retinal detachment, and this is called the stage known as proliferative diabetic retinopathy, which is when you have fibrovascular proliferation. So what is diabetic macular edema? So diabetic macular edema simply means that there is swelling, which is edema, of the macula. The macula is the central part of the retina. It's the portion of the retina that provides our central vision and our ability to see sharp, small objects. Why do patients get this? Well, there are two primary reasons. One are these microaneurysms. So microaneurysms are little dilations of the capillaries, and these little dilations are very leaky. So fluid leaks out, and it leaks into the retina, and the retina is like a sponge. So when the retina is dry, it's relatively thin and flat, but when the retina is wet, it swells just like a sponge. The other factor is related to a breakdown in what's called the blood-retina barrier. So just like the brain and the bloodstream have a blood-brain barrier, the retina, which is embryologically an extension of the central nervous system, also has an inner blood-retina barrier. This keeps the blood and the proteins within the blood from entering the retina. But with diabetes, the capillaries become very leaky. And so it's like having a leaky plumbing system. And over time, fluid leaks out. And when it leaks out into the retina will swell up just like, as I mentioned, a sponge. And the other factor has to do with ischemia. So when the retina becomes ischemic, part of the pathological response is the production of a hormone known as vascular endothelial growth factor, or VEGF. So VEGF is the inappropriate response of the retina to ischemia. When the retina is not getting enough oxygen, it sends out this growth factor, which is normally involved in the development of blood vessels in an embryo or in wound healing. So when VEGF is made, it results in proliferation of blood vessels, but these are abnormal blood vessels. And it also has the other effect of causing increased leakage. So due to ischemia, the retina can become very leaky. So as you can imagine, and if you have a patient that has diabetes, if they have high blood pressure, if you have high blood pressure and a leaky system, it's going to increase the leakage. So the first thing about diabetes is, of course, long-term management of high sugar levels. It's been found in randomized prospective trials that tight sugar control can slow down the progression of diabetic retinopathy and also has been associated with decreasing the incidence of diabetic macular edema. If you add blood pressure control and triglyceride and cholesterol control, that also helps prevent diabetic macular edema. So how, as ophthalmologists, do we make this diagnosis? Well, it's very important for us to screen patients. That's because patients that have type 2 diabetes, about 50% of them, when they first get diagnosed, already have diabetic retinopathy. And that's because it usually goes undiagnosed for many years. When we do a screening exam, we dilate our patient's eyes, and that allows us to look at the retina very carefully. And we look for the clinical signs of retinopathy, hemorrhages, microaneurysms, something called cotton wool spots, which are little infarcts of the inner retina, and other signs, like the more advanced stage, as a proliferative diabetic retinopathy. Fortunately, technology has also been highly prevalent in ophthalmology, and we have instruments which allow us to look at other findings in high detail. Fluorescein angiography is a way of analyzing the blood vessels in patients with diabetic retinopathy. It looks at the amount of leakage, so we can quantitate and also locate the areas that are leakage. That's particularly important, not just for diagnosis, but for guiding treatment. And perhaps the most significant advance has been the development of what's called optical coherence tomography, or OCT. OCT is a way of using a laser to produce a 2- or 3-dimensional image of the central retina with a resolution in commercial models of about 5 microns, or 5 millionths of a meter. This allows us to look for changes such as the swelling. We can measure the amount of retinal swelling and look for fluid. So the fluid pockets that develop can also be detected with very good sensitivity. What's the treatment? Well, the gold standard for the last 50 years has been, as many of you probably already know, laser photocoagulation. The early treatment diabetic retinopathy study was a pivotal study that concluded that the loss of vision, or what we call moderate visual loss, was diminished by 50% using laser photocoagulation at a 3-year period. So the vision loss went from 24% down to 12%. Unfortunately, laser, of course, is not perfect. If you looked at the patients that underwent laser, only about 3% had an improvement in vision at 3 years. So many patients will still lose vision despite treatment. The treatment itself is less effective when the type of leakage is diffuse. So patients that have a diffuse form of macular edema didn't respond as well. And the laser has some risks. The scars that are left in the retina can result in small blind spots in someone's central vision. And in some cases, these can enlarge, leading to impairment. So laser still has a role in our current management of diabetic macular edema, but its effectiveness is probably limited more to patients that have swelling that is threatening the central vision or threatening the fovea, but is not quite involving the fovea yet. There have been some advances in laser treatment. There's something called micropulse diode laser. This uses very short bursts of laser energy. It's found to be effective in resolving diabetic macular edema in about 57% of patients at 6 months. And the collateral damage is minimized because instead of applying laser over a tenth of a second, it's done at a 5% duty cycle, so it's, you know, a tenth of a millisecond over 200 milliseconds. Another treatment is called the Pascal laser. It allows us to apply patterns to treat the leakage that has made the treatment of diabetic macular edema easier for our practitioners. It's currently available. And there's a new system called the Navilas. It's a navigated laser system. It incorporates eye tracking and digital fundus photography to guide the treatment so we can, on a computer screen, target exactly what we need to treat. And then also, if the patient moves, it will halt the treatment, and so it has an added layer of safety. Of course, when laser doesn't work, there have been some off-label treatments that have been effective. Intravitreal, which means injections into the eye of a steroid, are used off-label. They've been shown to improve visual acuity by reducing edema, but they have significant side effects. About a third of patients develop elevated eye pressure, which is glaucoma, and it promotes the development of a cataract. In some patients, there are other factors which exacerbate the diabetic macular edema. For instance, if the internal membranes of the retina are very tight, or they have something called an epiretinal membrane that can exert traction on the retina, leading to increased leakage. And in those cases, or cases of refractory or unresponsive diabetic macular edema, vitrectomy, which is a type of surgery to remove these membranes, can be effective. Fortunately, in the last few years, there's been a paradigm shift. And there's a new paradigm in how we treat diabetic macular edema. And it has a lot of similarities in how we've learned to treat wet age-related macular degeneration. And this is really using what's called anti-VEGF therapy, or in other words, targeting that growth factor, vascular endothelial growth factor, which plays such a pivotal role in the development of diabetic macular edema as well as other eye problems. The first anti-VEGF drug that became available on the market is something called pegaptinib, or Macugen. This medication is a aptamer that binds to a specific form of VEGF called VEGF-165. It was initially approved to treat wet age-related macular degeneration, but it has been used off-label to treat diabetic macular edema. And in a phase 2 trial, they found that there was a lower percentage of patients needed a repeat laser. Unfortunately, pegaptinib does not work as well in practice because it binds to a region of this compound VEGF that is normally cleaved by proteins that are found in vivo. Another drug that has been in use for at least the last 5 years is something called Avastin or bevacizumab. This is once again an off-label use. Bevacizumab is approved for the use of metastatic colorectal cancer, but it's been in wide use for wet age-related macular degeneration as well as diabetic macular edema. It's a monoclonal antibody, so it binds to all forms of VEGF-A, and by removing VEGF-A or VEGF from the eye, the effects, the leakage, decrease. In one recent result of a trial, the two-year results of the BOLT trial, which is the intravitreal bevacizumab or laser therapy trial, they found that the group that received Avastin or bevacizumab gained about 9 letters of vision, which is 2 lines of vision, versus the laser group that lost half a letter, which is about not a baseline, no real change at 2 years. And 32% of the bevacizumab group gained at least 3 lines of vision versus only 4% in the laser group. So that's very encouraging. The downside with these injections is that their treatment is short-term. So unlike laser, which can leave a long-term benefit, these injections have to be repeated. So there are some drawbacks to injections. The most significant change has been the FDA approval of ranibizumab, which is Lucentis. This happened in August of this year. Lucentis was already approved for wet age-related macular degeneration, as well as swelling from a retinal vein occlusion. Lucentis is very similar to Avastin. It's made by the same company, Genentech. It's a monoclonal antibody fragment that binds with high affinity and specificity to VEGF-A. And the pivotal trials were the phase 2 RISE and RIDE trials, which showed that patients with ranibizumab were more likely to gain 3 lines of vision. It was about 40% versus 15%, and 16% had 20/40 vision or better. Another drug that just became approved earlier, it was approved in November of 2011, is something called aflibercept or Eylea. This is approved for wet age-related macular degeneration, recently got approved for macular edema from a vein occlusion. It's a fusion protein, so it contains the body of an antibody, but it contains the receptor, which binds with very high affinity to not only VEGF, but also something called placental growth factor, which is another growth factor involved in the process. So it's currently used off-label. In the phase 2 da Vinci trial, patients obtained better vision with aflibercept versus laser at 6 months, but it's still undergoing further evaluation. So what does this mean? Well, it does mean that with the advent of anti-VEGF therapy, patients that have edema that involves a central vision can respond. In many cases, it have an improvement in vision. In the past, they were the group of patients that responded least to laser. Whenever you laser, you're targeting energy to the retina and you're creating a burn. So if the swelling was involving the very center of the center of the fovea, you really couldn't laser that area because the laser itself would give a blind spot or hurt the vision. So you were limited in where you could laser. These anti-VEGF therapies allow us to treat central or foveal involving diabetic macular edema, and likewise use the laser to supplement sources of leakage. So as a practitioner, we have many more options now on how we can treat edema. We can use injections to stabilize and improve the vision, and we can use laser to try to create a more long-term effect. So the treatment of diabetic macular edema in the last probably 5 years is significantly evolving and changing. Laser had been the only real treatment for the last 50 years, and now it's really changing how we approach it. And our protocols are currently evolving. So there's still a lot of debate as to the best way to treat patients with DME. But it's encouraging that we have these new therapies available. And that doesn't even address some of the other exciting developments in other fields like stem cells, which are being currently studied for geographic atrophy and dry age-related macular degeneration, as well as some of the genetic therapies being studied for hereditary disorders like RPE65. But I wanted to thank you once again for the invitation, and I'll leave the microphone open for questions.
Okay. If you have a question, please raise your hand and stand so that the mic can be brought to you.
I have myopic macular degeneration in my left eye, and the doctor has been giving me Avastin. And I was wondering, are there any studies that are going on now with Avastin?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of backstory to the use of Avastin. So prior to Avastin, the primary treatment for AMD was a type of laser known as photodynamic therapy. And unfortunately, what photodynamic therapy or PDT could do was slow down the rate of vision loss. But that was considered the best treatment we had. When Lucentis was being studied for wet AMD, the results were remarkable because even though patients were randomized and masked and they didn't know, in theory, what they were receiving, and neither did the practitioners figured out pretty early on who was getting the drug when their vision actually improved instead of lost. They didn't lose vision, which was unheard of with wet AMD. Meantime, Avastin, when given intravenously for colon cancer, was found to have the same effect, which makes sense when you understand the mechanism. They both work by binding to VEGF. So while Lucentis was being studied and undergoing FDA trials, Avastin was available. And in one of the early reports, the results were presented at retina meetings. And many practitioners began adopting it for patients who were failing the available treatment. And it responded so that it became used widely. Recently, a CAT trial, which is the comparison of AMD treatment trials sponsored by the NIH, concluded that the two were comparable in efficacy and safety. So it kind of validated what people suspected. Because of its effectiveness in a number of related conditions like myopic choroidal neovascularization or myopic degeneration, which is what you described, what your diagnosis is, it also can be effective. And in fact, previously, PDT was considered the standard for myopic choroidal neovascularization. And there are some studies that have reported not only that Avastin is comparable, that it's actually better in terms of visual outcome compared to PDT. And unlike wet AMD that is usually chronic and requires ongoing treatment, most patients that have myopic choroidal neovascularization will respond to one, two, or maybe up to three injections. And once the abnormal membrane involutes, it doesn't recur with the frequency that you find in wet AMD. So Avastin is probably the one of the most commonly used treatments for myopic degeneration when there's choroidal neovascularization. Other drugs have not been studied widely because they are very costly. Lucentis, Eylea are about $2,000 per dosage. And unless the pharmaceutical companies will sponsor that trial to extend the indications, it's very difficult to initiate a trial without a sponsor. Well, fortunately, and I've had to deal with this personally, unfortunately, some insurances will look at treatment, and if it's not an FDA-approved trial indication, they'll say it's experimental. And fortunately, I've been able to, when that has come up, provide the literature, the evidence from these, and in most cases, they will accept that and will pay for it. But there are exceptions. I've had some insurance companies that, despite the fact that it's the best treatment available, they'd rather not pay for it. Right. But off-label, as you have to remember, is a lot of medications are used off-label. So the FDA will approve a medication for a specific cause. So, for instance, if you have an infection inside the eye, which is a very serious problem, there is no approved treatment for that. But there are effective off-label treatments that have been used for decades, which are intravitreal antibiotics. So for rare conditions, the process of getting FDA approval can be very lengthy and difficult. So there are treatments that are available, but they're used in an off-label basis.
In the mid-80s to 90s, I was treated with Cytoxan to control chronic inflammation and detachments. And as a result, I developed tumors in my bladder, which was a known drawback. Are the types of chemotherapy you mentioned earlier have that same consequence?
No, so that's a great question. And the Avastin, if you look at it as a chemotherapeutic agent because it's used for metastatic colon cancer, it works by a completely different mechanism. When a tumor is growing, it needs new blood cells or blood vessels to feed the tumor. And so Avastin works by blocking the hormones that are involved in generating these new blood vessels. Cytoxin works by affecting the rapidly dividing cells. And I imagine you probably had some type of uveitis or inflammation of... Okay, so you had VKH, Voigt-Koyanagi-Harada disease. Yeah, so in a chronic uveitis, you have to treat the underlying inflammation to prevent some of the blinding complications of the disease. And there are a number of different drugs that are used, all of them have significant potential side effects. One of the newer drugs that are being evaluated are called biologics. These are drugs which specifically target immune proteins like tumor necrosis factor alpha. You may have heard of some of these to treat autoimmune conditions. There's Humira, Enbrel, Remicade. They've been particularly effective in controlling inflammation, but they do have potentials for increasing risk of cancer and increasing risk of infection. So patients that are on these medications do have to be closely monitored because of the seriousness of these side effects. So Avastin works by a different mechanism. That's not found to be a side effect of the Avastin.
Doctor, are you saying Avastin or Lucentis is the better treatment for macular degeneration?
For wet AMD? I'm saying that anti-VEGFs in general. So for wet age-related macular degeneration, in my professional opinion, Eylea, which is received approval last November, Lucentis, which was approved, I believe, in 2006, and Avastin, which has been used off-label since 2005, all have been found to have comparable efficacies, meaning when you look at their long-term vision, the results are similar. But there are differences between drugs, and in fact, my approach has always been if a patient is not responding to a particular medication after a set amount of injections, that you would consider switching to a different one, because there are subsets of patients who seem to respond better to one versus another. And it's been reported that patients may respond when you switch from one to the other. There's a phenomenon in which they become more resistant. It's called tachyphylaxis. So changing the medication can help. I'm not saying that I think an anti-VEGF is the best treatment for wet AMD. In my own experience and based on the literature, the first one that came out, which was Macugen, seems to be the least effective, but it still is better than the laser. And there are, of course, particular types of wet AMD in which the laser, either by itself or in combination with these injections, may be the best approach. And that's because wet AMD is not a single entity. There are a variety of different types. There's occult CNV and classic CNV and a mixed form. There's something called retinal angiomatous proliferation, something called polypoidal choroidal vasculopathy. So there are different types of wet AMD, and how they respond can vary. So you have to really tailor the treatment to the patient.
We have time for one more question, if there's one.
Don't see any hands.
Okay. Well, Dr. Ferrer, thank you very much this evening coming. Really appreciate it to get some. We have a great deal of interest by our members, particularly those with diabetes, to know what are the newer treatments. And again, thank you very much for giving your evening to come to us. Thank you. Okay. Before we move on to legislative report, let's do a door prize. Get votes for that. Okay. Who's going to draw the... Okay. Yosemite Gateway has brought us a gobble bag of goodies. Okay, I'll draw. And then we'll do another one afterwards. Go ahead, Donna.
Gene gets a dropper.
Okay. And then you do the next one. I'm mixing them up. Tom Traer? Here. Okay, I'm going to do one more right now. And Donna will pull this one. Silicon,
big top
cupcakes.
Silicon bakeware.
Oh, it's bakeware. Sounds very good, and I think you'll draw my name on this. I know Kathy would like it.
Uh-oh, should I draw your name, Gene?
Yes, of course.
Let's see, is that the one that has the dot on it over
Yeah.
What's wrong with
you? Ethics. Lillian Scaife.
Not here.
Oh. Bonnie Rainey?
Hey.
Good. Okay. Now we will have our CCB legislative report from Jeff Tom.
Okay. Thank you, Gene. Yes, thank you. I first where my resolution sat for a second and... remind anyone, if you want to submit a resolution or bring something to us, tonight is the time to do it. This is the last meeting at which you will be able to submit an idea, and our meeting, of course, is in Coronado, or if you want to come and listen in to our proceedings, I think it is very instructive to do so, so I invite you to do that. Okay, so governmental affairs. I didn't know I'd have time to do a report, but since the World Series ended nice and quick, I was able to do something for you. So.
No, you're not sorry.
I really want to say it has been a pleasure this year to work on behalf of this organization. I really enjoyed the input from the Governmental Affairs Committee. Donna and I really work hard on these issues. We're always talking to one another and trying to come up with the best approach to work on all of our behalfs. And it has been, I think, a hard year, but a good year. And it would not have happened had it not been for many of what you all do. And I'm going to point to a few specifics as I go along in that area. First, let's go to our own bill. We did get a bill passed this year. Proud to say, proud of you. AB 2041 by Assemblymember Swanson was a, as it's known in the legislative speak, a cleanup bill to a bill that passed last year of ours, AB 410, which dealt with requiring state agents, certain state agencies, we wish it had been all of them, but we got half a loaf, certain state agencies to make their proposed regulations in formats readable by screen reading software upon a request. So, getting a bill passed this governor is not easy, and, you know, we did get it, so you got to count your blessings. So that was really I thank everyone who made any phone calls over the past several years. It dated back to an idea that Gene Lozano first brought to this group a number of years, three, 4 years ago now. And we managed to finally get done with it, although there's still some time in the future, you know, the notion that we want to expand it to cover all state agencies. So sometime, maybe we'll get there. Okay, let's now look at the big elephant in the room, so to speak, every year in the state, and that is the budget, because that's where either directly or indirectly most of the major decisions get made. And I could talk for an hour on the budget, but you wouldn't want to hear it.
No.
But I will talk about a few areas that closely and greatly impact those of us who are blind or vision impaired. And the first is library services. And I've mentioned this before, and I don't have too much new to add in terms of progress. But the problem is that the money there is state money that is used for other library programs, not ours. And that money is currently used to match some federal money that is used for our library services. And if we're okay through this year, this fiscal year, but The next year, if we don't get any matching money, or if there isn't a what is called a federal waiver that is granted, then we risk losing our federal allocation, and that would really cripple library services. However, we have had a lot of excellent traction with legislative leaders. We also communicated with the director of finance, who's really the governor's right hand when it comes to making decisions affecting money. And so she has been made aware of this issue and has expressed her concern that it be handled. We have heard from other sources that it is the full intent that that waiver will be obtained. And so one way or another, although the issue has not been put to bed this year as we hoped it might, there is every reason to think there is a good chance that it will not be a problem. However, if you think for 1 minute that we're going to just sit around and let the bureaucracy, you know, automatically solve this problem, then you better have another thing coming, because we have to monitor it very closely. As soon as the legislature is back in session and in their new session, and make sure that things are happening and that this waiver, if necessary, or money, whichever route it takes, is received. So we may be calling upon you again to testify, as we've done, and there have been members of this organization that have done it a couple of years now in a row, and who knows, we may need you again. Okay, disabled student services funding. We managed to, and again, we had a lot of people, but a number of you were in this group as well, who wrote letters and testified directly on issues of avoiding cuts to disabled student services funding at the community college level. And, of course, there's also a risk, although it didn't come up this year, for funding being cut for the state university system as well. A lot of this will depend on what happens to Prop 30, because although for this fiscal year they have budgeted in the cuts they're going to make, there's no question that if Prop 30 does not pass, and at this point in time the polls are looking a little bit into the negative, if it does not pass, there is going to be a look at everything will be on the chopping block. And because of the already severe cuts in areas such as health and social services, which in many cases have been cut as low as they can without causing federal problems, there's really only a few areas to go. And the biggest elephant in the room in this case is education, whether it's K through 12 or whether it's community college and state universities and UC, the whole all of your college systems. So we'll see what happens, but if Prop 30 does not pass, you can bet that next year is going to be very dismal in this area. Okay, next budget issue I want to talk to you about is the California School for the Blind. I want to go back a couple of years. Last year, for the 2011 budget, both schools, the School for the Blind and the School for the Deaf, took a pretty big cut, and so in light of that cut, the School for the Blind ended its week-long short courses for mainstream students. But this year it looked like there would have to be more cuts. And also I should add that there were certain positions that they could not fill, because they, didn't have the money to fill them. And it's very possible they'll lose those positions forever. But this year it looked like there would be some further cuts. And there was a really strong effort, and many CCB members were involved in it. And I bring you a thing from Stuart Widenstein, who is really appreciative of the efforts that this organization undertook to help lead the effort against cutting money for the California School for the Blind. As it turned out, we got a temporary victory. The legislature did hear the concerns that further cuts to the schools would have, and they did find some federal money somewhere. It seems that the state can often find money somewhere. You keep hearing these reports, oh, there's $50 million here and $50 million. Unfortunately, they never used to find it when I was employed by the state, as all you rehab counselors would know. They never find it for salaries, but they seem to find money somewhere. Yes, the parks, they find a lot of money there. But anyway, they found federal money, and so they did not have to make a cut. But that federal money is one-time money. And so, again, you can bet your bottom dollar, especially if Prop 30 is defeated, that anything may happen next year. And remember that the California School for the Blind is in some ways in a worse position than the public schools in that they are going to need to possibly cut state employees, and one place where they're going to look is cutting across the board in the Department of Education. So, and that's where the CSB employees are. So, it could be very severe this year. We'll soon see. It was interesting to note Stuart Wittenstein, the superintendent, told me that they actually, even though they have had, you know, some position reductions, they actually have an increase, a slight increase in their population, because things have gotten so bad in the districts that the districts are actually finding it better and preferable to send their kids to the School for the Blind. And that is something that in years past we would never have thought to see, because they usually wanted to keep the money in the district. So that's kind of interesting. Well, I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's interesting. Okay, let's move on to what is called the Coordinated Care Initiative, or the Duals Demonstration Project for Medicare and Medicaid. There's a lot of names that it goes under. I've talked about this before. I won't spend too much time on it, but essentially what's going to be happening, or at least what's slated to happen potentially over the next few years, is that ultimately all Medicare, all individuals who are both Medi-Cal and Medicare eligible will be put into managed care. Just as already in most of the state, just those Medi-Cal recipients with disabilities who are not on Medicare as well have already been placed into managed care. I'll only go so far as to say that it was supposed to happen by somewhere between March and June, that it would be inaugurated in 8 counties, San Diego, Orange, Riverside, San Bernardino, Santa Clara, Alameda. Well, I'm getting to Los Angeles. There again, we got another big elephant in the room. Los Angeles, because the vast majority, obviously, of the population that would be affected is Los Angeles. And that is why the federal government, I suspect one of the big reasons that the federal government has still not given the state its final permission yet. So no one knows yet whether part of Los Angeles will be put into this project, all of it, whether it will all be excluded. We don't know when it's going to actually start, because the later things go on without starting, it's impossible to say. There are conditions in the legislation that if they don't happen, the project isn't supposed to happen. So it's anybody's guess right now as to what is going to happen with this, and it's a major issue. But ultimately, managed care is ultimately the wave of the future in you know, publicly funded and private programs. And key, as I've said before, is that we make managed care work for us rather than against us. So, okay, I want to briefly talk about a couple of other bills before I entertain questions. SB 1298, this was a bill that passed and was signed by the governor that allows testing of autonomous vehicles, which essentially are vehicles that do not require, that can be operated without an actual driver operating them. The bill went through a lot of changes as it went along. I'm not going to attempt to get into the details, but one of the things that did finally come out of the bill is that except when it's being operated by an employee or agent of a autonomous technology manufacturer, the only way that it can be tested on the public highways is after an application is filed with the Department of Motor Vehicles. A number of conditions are met, including some by the manufacturer. And not only that, but there's going to have to be regulations adopted by DMV before these applications are going to be filed. So this is good for a number of reasons. Number one, it will give us a chance, Steve Mendelson and others, it will give us a chance when these public hearings occur to make our voices heard in terms of our concerns. Number two, and this is something that I really hope happens, hopefully by the time these regulations are adopted, since one of the conditions is meeting federal requirements, hopefully the feds will have, and Mitch, you have to get on this, the feds will have come down with our Pedestrian Act requirements in terms of hybrid cars, so that any of the fleet that are hybrid in nature have to meet those requirements. So, you know, one can hope. We'll see. SB 1186 was another very major bill. It dealt with physical access. It was basically a bill that had twin goals of the first goal was really to attempt to solve the issue of the very few attorneys out there who are basically preying on small businesses. And the second goal was to try and further access for persons with disabilities. There were a lot of provisions aimed at doing both. I'm not going to get into a whole lot of details. There were some things that we didn't like, but there were many things that we did. And so, you know, we'll see what the future holds with this bill, and we'll see if it indeed does help in either one of these goals. What we've been doing, one of the recent things that we've been working on that President Pomerantz has been working on with others of us is that the Secretary of State's registration system on their website for voter registration is not fully accessible, and we've been doing some work to try and work with the Secretary of State in an effort to ensure its full access. So that's sort of an ongoing. There's not a whole lot to say about it, but I think it's important that you know that we are in there working on many of these issues. The Social Security COLA, I'm sure many of you already know this. Next year's Social Security increase is a whopping, 1.7% or something like that, which somehow doesn't seem quite enough when you consider all the problems that, you know, we're having in terms of prices, but that's what it is, and they have a formula that they go by. There's a number of issues that I could bring up, but I think in terms, in because of time and because I want to have some questions, if necessary, if there are any, I will sort of leave them. I would like to say, though, that we're almost certain to have a Capital Day next spring, and I hope that you will be able to participate in that, to make our voices heard in Sacramento, because believe me, they are heard. But however you can help during the year to come on the issues that are in front of us, whether it's helping us when we identify an issue for you, or whether it's identifying an issue for us that we need to pursue, you are really the way that we get things done, and I want to please ask you to do your utmost for what I believe to be the main purpose of this organization, and that is our advocacy. So thank you very much. If there's any questions, if Gene, if there's time, happy to answer them.
Yes.
Okay, Jeff, I was wondering, will the 1.7% Social Security increase, will that be received by SSI recipients in California, or will there be a commensurate reduction in the SSP payment as there has been the last few years?
I don't believe there will be this year. They can always do something, you know, in the session, but as far as I know, there will not be this year.
Hello, Jeff. It's Warren. First of all, I want to say it may be possible that I'll be coming up to Sacramento more than I was expecting, so I hope to run into you there.
Great.
I want to say first, I do have some concerns with 1186. I also have some concerns with the Coordinated Care Initiative, but I want to say that because we're in a really difficult time right now, and we don't know what's going to happen, and we may know more next Tuesday. But I really think that there's a lot up in the air in terms of the larger policy issues. We're seeing transportation being cut left and right. We're seeing IHSS being cut. We're seeing Medi-Cal being cut. Things aren't being covered. And my feeling is that these larger policy questions of health care and IHSS, Medi-Cal, even housing and transportation, I really hope that we also watch those issues, because those are the issues I work on most. And I know that there's a lot of folks that care a lot about some of the things that were talked about. But these larger issues, I think, we could really see, especially if things go the wrong way at the federal level, we could really see some difficult times ahead for the larger questions out there.
Yeah, Warren, let me just speak to that, and I concur with every word you said. One of the things that Donna said to me was, when she first got into office, she said, you know, we need a bigger presence and in Sacramento. We need to be doing more. And so we have done that. We have gotten involved much more in various groups that have been working on different initiatives and different issues. We've gotten very involved, and I'll just give you one example. We have submitted written testimony, and in some instances oral testimony, on a number of issues. For example, we have been very strenuously working at both the state and federal level to ensure that people who become involved in the future, as well as those that are already involved in Medi-Cal managed care, get their materials in alternative formats. And we've made this known all the way through to the U.S. Department of Justice. So there, Warren, I could have spoken about so many of these issues. You're absolutely right, and we certainly aren't going to ignore them.
Got one more.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah. Hi. Is this work? There we go. This is Doug Martin from San Diego. Jeff, I'm wondering if, I believe it's Proposition 37, the one with respect to labeling of food items, are there any accessibility issues that are either built into or would be affected either positively or negatively by passage or failure of that proposition?
No. I mean, food labeling is food labeling. And that proposition, whether it is passed or not, won't really impact us in terms of our accessibility to food labeling.
Thank you.
I don't see any other hands.
Any other questions?
Are we done?
Okay.
Pardon me?
Are there any other questions? No?
No.
Did I finish too quickly?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. There's been we have a change in our program this evening, and I think a situation arose, and we have an out-of-state guest, and we wanted to give him opportunity to speak, and Mitch Pomerantz offered to give his presentation added to what he's going to do tomorrow evening during the banquet. So you will hear Mitch talk. But right now, we are very honored to have Mr. Kirk Adams here, who is the president and CEO of the Lighthouse for the Blind, headquartered in Seattle, Washington. The Lighthouse for the Blind has 10 facilities along the West Coast. He is the first president of the Lighthouse who is actually blind. Mr. Adams lost his vision at the age of 5 due to bilateral retinal detachment. He attended the Oregon School for the Blind, and then in the fifth grade went to public school. And during this time period and afterwards, he was very active in his academics and sports activities. He's come this evening to talk to what the Lighthouse is for doing and share other things relevant to his work there in Seattle. So let's give Mr. Adams a big hand.
Okay. I think I'm on. Am I on? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So again, my name is Kirk Adams. I am CEO of the Lighthouse for the Blind, Inc., which is headquartered in Seattle. And I want to thank President Donna for inviting me to speak and giving me the opportunity, and for Mitch's flexibility in doing what his wife told him to do and giving up some of his time. So I want to tell you a little bit about myself and then just paint a little bit of a picture of the organization as it is now. And then I want to talk about the future. As was mentioned, my retina is both detached when I was in kindergarten. I started as a first grader at OSB, Oregon State School for the Blind in Salem, which no longer exists. sadly for me and others. I got an excellent schooling in blindness skills. I had a teacher, Mrs. Summers, who made me practice my sweet backs of my hands for hours upon hours upon hours before she would teach me the Braille code. You know, I still have the slate that I got in first grade. It's in my briefcase. So I learned the Perkins, learned to type on a typewriter, used the cane, and then I started in public school in fourth grade and went all the way on through to graduate school. And I was always the only blind student in school from then on. So I have an undergraduate degree in economics. I have a master's degree in not-for-profit leadership, and I'm 2 years into a PhD in leadership and change through Antioch University, and I'm focusing on school-to-work transition for blind youth and looking at why, what are the barriers that are preventing major employers from including young blind people in their entry-level workforce. So that's what I'm exploring. Married, have two kids, 26 and 22. I thought they were both out of the house, but the daughter came back last week, so we'll try again. I was hired at the Lighthouse in 2000 as the development director, as the fundraising person. In January, I will have been the CEO for 5 years. I do want to ask you if you have any thoughts, questions, comments at any time to please contact me. My phone number at my desk is 206-436-2110. Our website is seattlelighthouse.org. I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn. I'd love to be in a dialogue with y'all. The organization, we are a nonprofit social enterprise. We just finished our fiscal year with record revenues of a little over $54 million. We have 400 total employees, 240 are blind. We're the largest employer of deafblind people in the country. We have 42 deafblind employees, mostly people with Usher's syndrome who are born deaf and also have RP. Our major manufacturing facility is in Seattle. We've been there for a long time. 4 years ago, we opened a satellite facility in Spokane, Washington, and we have 55 blind people working there, mostly blind residents of Spokane who are unemployed. And our purpose is to create good, high-quality jobs for people who are blind. We do that. We focus on being an employer ourselves. We don't do a lot of placement. We partner with our state Department of Services for the Blind. But we want to offer good jobs and be a place a person can come and work and develop their career and retire from if they choose to. So we want to be a good option. About 20% of our business is commercial aerospace manufacturing. So next time you fly on a Boeing airplane, just be proud that there are around 2,000 parts in that plane made by blind machinists and the Seattle Lighthouse. So we buy computer numerically controlled equipment that's also used in the automotive industry from Japan. It's called Akuma. They've worked with us. It's a Windows-based processor and controller. So we have done scripting so JAWS and Zoom Text will run the equipment. So we have 90 blind and deafblind machinists making parts as we speak. We're running two shifts right now. We just became qualified to do work for Northrop Grumman's Aerospace and Space Division, which is based here in El Segundo, California. That just happened about 2 weeks ago. So about 80% of our jobs are through a federal employment program called Ability One. It's based on the Javits-Wagner-O'Day Act. And some of you might recognize that name, or JWAD, which was just a lovely name for a program. It's called Ability One, and the tool that it gives us is that if we can identify a product or a service that the government or the military buys, and we can show that we can meet all the specifications, the pricing, the delivery, and we can do it with 75% of the direct labor going into the product or service being done by people who are blind, then we can have the contract set aside. So we, just as a couple examples, we provide the United States Army with all of their 1- and 2-quart canteens that are issued to the soldiers. We make their entrenching tool, which is a collapsible shovel. We fabricate that. We make all the on-the-move hydration, which is a backpack with a reservoir for water and a drink tube and a bite valve. So we do a lot of machining. We do a lot of metal. We have a big plastic injection mold shop. We also, under Ability One, we run base supply centers on military bases. We have 3 in Washington State. We have 1 at Fallon, Nevada. We have 1 at China Lake, California. 1 in San Diego for the Navy. And we just got a contract to build 1 for the Army at Fort Irwin near Barstow. And we employ blind people in these base supply centers. So if you know blind people in Barstow, let me know, because we'll be looking for some folks. We're also looking at service businesses like contract management. We have an office here in San Diego where blind people are closing contracts for the Navy, which were created over the past years and never closed. Michael Eden, who's a member of the Braille Club affiliate of your organization, spoke at the AMC luncheon today, so he'd be a great person to talk to if you want to know more about contract management. Okay, for the future, I became the CEO in January of 2008. Spent the first 15 months doing a strategic plan. We did a really authentic job. We convened a summit in our building. We had the Washington Council of Blind. We had NFB of Washington, the Talking Book and Braille Library, the School for the Blind, other nonprofits, parents of blind kids. And we went through a process to really make sure that we were clear on how we could be the best value to blind people in our communities. And we got a really clear answer, and the answer was create more jobs and pay higher wages. So we have our, we call it our BHAG. It's our big, hairy, audacious goal of creating 500 livable wage jobs by December 31st, 2016. And we spend all day, every day working on that. We have 5 strategies to get us there, and I'll just walk you through them really briefly. One is to build on our manufacturing expertise. We are a gold supplier for the Boeing company. We have a 99.85% acceptance rates of our parts. We know how to do that. We know how to make those jobs accessible. So, for instance, going out and becoming qualified for Northrop Grumman is a piece of that. We just spent about $4 million to buy new equipment so that we can start machining titanium and start doing composites, because the new aircraft, like the Boeing 787 Dreamliner, is going to not be made out of aluminum anymore. It's going to be made out of composite materials. And we need to be ahead of that curve and be in that industry. We also want to look at durable medical goods, because our research has shown that that will be a rapidly growing industry here in the United States. We do want to create more jobs in service businesses. Talking to blind people, especially younger blind people, there's definitely an interest in working with technology and information and being in that knowledge industry, service industry. So we are working on creating jobs in contact centers. I know Junior Blind in Los Angeles is doing something very similar. We're partnering with them, just sharing information and best practices. We want to expand the contract management. We've recently been hired by Microsoft to help them identify and recruit blind software test engineers around the country, because they are having trouble finding people. And we believe there could be a viable service business with blind people doing recruiting, doing the resume screening, the initial phone interviews, and doing those HR recruiting functions. So we're putting a business plan together to look at that. Physical and geographic expansion. As I mentioned, we have a small base supply center here at Point Loma. We have our contract management office. We have our other 2 base supply centers. we believe that we can be successful in helping create jobs here in the state of California. There is an infinitesimal number of blind people employed under the Ability One program in the state, and there are thousands of blind Californians with open cases looking for jobs. So we'd like to help meet that need. Just had a lengthy meeting, 20th lengthy meeting with the Navy here yesterday, talking about how we can identify some other services that we can provide with blind employees to the Navy. I have a meeting Tuesday afternoon with Brian Bashan and the Bay Area. We're looking at putting a teaming agreement together with San Francisco Lighthouse so that we can bring our product development and manufacturing expertise into the community and work with them to create some manufacturing jobs in the Bay Area. Really, partnerships and collaborations are what need to happen for us to be successful in meeting our goals and creating those jobs and paying those wages. We can't do it ourselves, so we really need to find alliances and partners and people who want to work together. Our fourth strategy is really to become the leader in workplace accessibility, use of assistive technology, and training. After our strategic planning process, we put together ad hoc committees to drill down into each of our strategies. So we had an ad hoc committee on accessibility, assistive technology, and training. Some of you know Marlena Lieberg. She was a community representative on the committee. We ended up with a board policy formalizing the organization's commitment to accessibility, creating an accessibility manager position, which is now held by Peggy Martinez, whom some of you know. And we gave her a big fat budget. So we put all the accessibility expenses that used to be kind of scattered throughout all the departments, and we pulled it all together under Peggy, put together accommodations request processes. We've created the Board of Trustees directed me to create a management committee on accessibility and training that meets regularly, includes community members, Marlena, someone from DSB, deafblind person, as well as representatives from every activity center of the Lighthouse. And the job of we call it the MCAT, the Management Committee on Accessibility and Training, is to understand where we are at with accessibility and AT, where we need to go, what the gaps are, what the resources are that are necessary to do that, and then that group chaired by Peggy reports to the board annually. We just had our first annual report out to our board in June where they kind of laid out the big picture of where we needed to go with AT. We have to use technology in order to be competitive, in order to meet the pricing demands in the marketplace. We just have to be automated. We have to use computers and AT. And a lot of our employees have big gaps in their formal education and gaps in computer skills. So we have two computer training programs, one for hearing blind employees, one for deafblind employees. I'm a big Braille zealot, so I just believe people need to read Braille if they're blind. So we have Braille training. Julie Brannon's very active in the council in our state. Some of you may know her. She's our Braille trainer now, full time. We have three O&M instructors on staff so people can travel successfully to and from work. We received a federal grant through Department of Transportation to teach safe travel training and teach people to use the new light rail in Seattle. And there's an equipment distribution piece of that, so we've distributed to our employees 32 iPhones and 27 Trekker Breezes in the last couple months, provided training around wayfinding, and I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from employees on that. our fifth strategy is really around branding and key messaging and being visible in the communities, locally, regionally, nationally. We do spend about $2 million a year on mission-related expense so our employees can be successful. Sign language interpreting. We have a Braille department, so no sighted person is getting their pay stub in print before a person gets their pay stub in Braille, I'll tell you that. So, we have the training programs, O&M instruction. So we do have a foundation, which I created. That's what I was hired to do originally. We have a foundation board. We raise money. We're raising about $1 million a year toward those mission-related expenses. We still subsidize it $1 million a year out of income from our businesses. And the goal is to build the foundation and the endowment to the point where we can reinvest all of the money from the businesses back into developing new products and services, buying equipment, building buildings, hiring more people. So creating 500 livable wage jobs will be a very significant thing to do. It will benefit, obviously, more blind people than we're benefiting now. But I'm also interested in expanding our number of employees and expanding our representation geographically, because I want us to have a seat at the table where blind employment issues are being discussed. I think we have a unique perspective because we have successfully employed blind people in a wide variety of jobs, HR, IT, marketing, product development, training, marketing, the whole gambit. But then when I, in my PhD research, I'm reading, I got a stack of 100 articles about school-to-work transition. And then when I see 65% of sighted high school graduates have a job before they're 24, and only 29% of blind high school graduates have a job before they're 24, that pisses me off. So I want to be at the table. So I want to be at the table when people are discussing these things. There's a saying I love. It says, if you're not at the table, you might just be on the menu. And I don't want our blind kids to be on the menu. So that's what we're focused on, being a great employer, providing good options for blind people as far as their careers and work go, and then working on systems changes. I mean, we can employ ourselves, the Lighthouse, 2,000 people, and it doesn't make a dent in the problem. So we really want to work on systems change and policy change. And with that, I will conclude my remarks, and I don't know if we have time for questions.
Yes, we have a few moments. Are there any questions?
No more.
Hello, this is Roger Peterson. Kirk, I'm really happy to hear from you. I have a couple of items. One is, I'm curious to know what a nonprofit social enterprise is. Is that a different animal from other nonprofits that we know about? And the other is, I don't suppose we could get some national mileage out of your program through talking to Peggy's sister, the Assistant Secretary of Education.
We love our Kathy. We've had her in several times for visits, and we're in great dialogue with Kathy. The descriptor, well, obviously a nonprofit is a nonprofit. We're a 501c3, and the social enterprise indicates that our revenues are through earned income through businesses. 95% of our income comes through the productive labor of people who are blind and providing products and services to customers. As opposed to, to be grant funded or government funded. So it's a model where our mission is to employ people, and our economic engine is to employ people. So the the mission and the revenue stream are one and the same.
Mr. Adams, congratulations on your exemplary work and your remarkable achievements. Wish you continued success in the future. I'm wondering, in terms of expanding the scope of your range of contracts and services, do you foresee the possibility that if and when your work extends to providing products or services that fall into the information technology and communications realm, that you may be able to avail yourself vis-a-vis government purchasers of the priorities accorded by Section 508?
Yeah, 508 assurance, I think, is a possibility. We had a very minor success. We one of our IT professionals, a gentleman named Don Swaney, was under contract to Amazon for 9 months, and he was sitting with their engineers and giving them real-time feedback on accessibility of their constant tweaks of their site. And they stole him away from us and created a job and hired him, so that, which was fantastic. So we have a little minor experience with that. We are one of 60 nonprofits for the government that employing people who are blind that are in an association called National Industries for the Blind. National Industries for the Blind has put 508 assurance on a GSA schedule, so it is available to the government, and NIB would then subcontract out to individual agencies. So I think it's in its infancy. Well, I know it's in its infancy. There's just a handful of people have been employed doing this kind of work under the Ability One program. But I think it's something that really bears some focus.
Mr. Adams, how many people at the Lighthouse make more than $100,000 a year? And what's a percentage of the top 10% what best paid to the rest of the employees?
Let me think about how best to answer that. There aren't very many people making over $100,000 a year. We are a nonprofit. Our average wage in manufacturing, that includes entry-level people who don't have any work experience, is 14 to 15 an hour. In the machine shop, it's considerably higher. It's, 17 to 22. 25% of our indirect positions, managerial, technical, professional, are held by people who are blind, and the average wages there are in that $22 to $24 an hour range. We have an internal goal of 40% of blind people in those jobs. And as I mentioned earlier when I was on a panel, we have great challenge around finding blind professionals who have the work experience required for some of our jobs. And the example I used today is a network engineer, where we kept a network engineer job open for 2 years using consultants and searching for qualified blind applicants. And we find blind people with a computer sciences degree, but they don't have the 10 to 12 years of experience needed to run a network like ours, where we have 10 locations. So it's one of my keeping me awake at night issues, because your question is very insightful, because the fact of the matter is that 60% or more of our employees are blind, and 60% of the salaries are going to sighted people, and that's because of that top 10 or 15% of the professional technical, especially in aerospace. If you can find me a blind aerospace quality manager, I'll hire him right now. So it's one of our big challenges.
I have a question about is there a conflict and an agitation between Ability One, JWAD, and the Randolph-Shepard Act Amendment?
Not in my world. We're not involved in food service, so I'm not a good person to answer that question. I'd probably turn toward, I know you have a Randolph-Shepard vendors group in the CCB, and they'd probably be a lot more familiar with those issues, because in our agency and organization, there's no conflict. We have three base supply centers at Joint Base Lewis-McChord. There's Randolph Shepherd operations on Joint Base Lewis-McChord. You know, we don't step on each other's toes.
One more questions we have.
Okay.
Is there one?
Yes.
This is the last one.
This is Irene Nunez from ABIB. Oh, sorry. Irene Nunez, ABIB. I lived in Barstow all my life, just moved to San Bernardino 3 years ago. I moved to San Bernardino in the mid-80s to go to Cal State, unfortunately blunked out. And I went to the Lighthouse at that time, and when I moved back to Barstow, asked if we were going to get any kind of services up there. So I'm very interested in seeing if we can get some services up in the high desert. A Lighthouse started up there. I do know a few blind people up there.
Fantastic.
But we do need something up there. There was a my church started a blind group, but it fizzled out. And so I'm back. I went back to Cal State, and now I'm trying to find employment. But I just think for some of the outer areas, we need some kind of progress, some kind of services to help those that do need. I just found out about a student at the Barstow Community College, and they contacted me because my sister works in administration. To ask me questions about certain blind issues and how to better equip the student. So we do need services up there.
Yeah. Irene, what's ABIV?
Active Blind Inland Valley. So I'm the active president. Okay.
It is challenging in rural areas. For instance, we do have our base supply center at China Lake, which is near Ridgecrest, and we've got one at Fallon Naval Air Station in Fallon, Nevada. And it has proven challenging to provide the appropriate level of support to our blind employees in those rural locations. We're doing it, but we need to figure out ways to do it better.
Thank you.
Let's thank you very much, Mr. Adams.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Give him a hand. Okay, now, before we have our next presentation, let's have a door prize and give us a chance all to stand up, okay? Don't leave the room, please, don't leave. Okay, we got Alameda Fudge, and Linda O'Neill has donated ACB Capital Chapter.
Harry and David Trailside.
Harriet and David.
Trailside Goody Box.
Trailside Goody Box. I'm in a lot of pain, Ed. I am sorry. Okay. Okay. Go ahead, Donna.
My name is Louis Herrera.
Louis Herrera. And Louis can give up his fudge to us, right?
Yeah. Don't say I don't care, Louis.
Oh, heck, let's do another door prize. Okay, thank you.
Oh, we're not sure what it is.
It's a, okay. There's a dot on it.
Is there a dot on it? That's the one with the... We're waiting for Roller Skates Ed, poor thing, to get us the door prize. So see, Louie, the next time you say I don't ever give you anything, Just remember this.
This is men's large pajamas.
Men's large pajamas and fudge. So that you it's eat the fudge.
Eat the fudge first. While the large man is in his pajamas.
Yes. Yes. Okay, here. Yeah, there's Cindy Aguilar.
Cindy Aguilar.
Cindy Aguilar in the room? Cindy Aguilar in the room? I don't think so. Okay, Cindy's in the room, but she doesn't hear us. Okay, and Ed? Ed?
Oh.
Put this in back in the bucket. This is one. And could I also impose, if there's a volunteer, if there's a Diet Pepsi in the back of the room, could somebody bring me one, please?
Oh.
I need some caffeine.
No. No Diet Pepsi.
You don't want me to fall asleep during your report, do you?
Of course. Then he won't heckle me.
Okay. Okay.
Wow.
Okay. It gives me great pleasure to turn over the mic to our president, Donna Pomerantz, to hear her presidential report for the fall of 2012. Donna?
Okay. Oh, door prizes. Let's see. Earlier today, I pulled Stephanie Rood's name, and tonight I pulled Louis Herrera's name. One would think I'm trying to, pull the names of the streaming team on purpose. Well, I just want to welcome everyone to this convention. I think it's a great one, and I absolutely love this hotel. It's so easy to get around in. Very, very easy to get around in. And don't know, has everybody found the complimentary coffee? Yes, it's delicious. Well, our convention theme this year is following our vision in challenging times. And we definitely are in challenging times. Our vision and our mission, what we strive to do is to increase the independence, security, equality of opportunity, improving the lives of all Californians who are blind and visually impaired. All Californians, whether they are members of the CCB family or whether they are not members directly of the CCB family. We strive to make things better for all Californians who are blind or visually impaired. And we do that in a number of ways. Tonight you heard Jeff Tom, our governmental affairs chair, who is also acting director of advocacy and governmental affairs. Jeff volunteers his time to work that position as well. And the good news that I wish to share with you tonight is that Jeff Tom has shared with me that he gives his commitment to work that position again for 2013 on behalf of CCB. We are very, very fortunate to have him in Sacramento on our behalf when all the rest of us are not able to get there. Again, another way that we work to increase independence and improve the lives and quality of life for all Californians is by advocating and working to get bills passed for increased accessibility in all areas. As Jeff said, and I encourage you as well, to plan on attending Capitol Day in 2013. It is our hope to be able to have it the day before our spring 2013 conference and convention. So mark that on your calendars and hope that we will have many, many people present to walk the halls of our Capitol in Sacramento. Yes, it's very important. Our board of directors is leading by example. Almost every board member is now chairing one of CCB's many committees. So that is definitely a great example to the membership of CCB. Each and every board member has committed to chair one or more, because some board members are still chairing two, committees of the CCB. It is through our committees that the CCB family gets the work of the council done. And what I would ask of all of you out there, again, is to let us know where you feel you wish to serve or work the ground of the council. We are a grassroots advocacy organization. We are about the people. We are the people, as I shared with someone earlier today. CCB is each and every one of us. Our board members have all committed to be active in the CCB fundraiser, the 2013 Mutt Strut, if the board approves all the proposals that come before it in December, first week of December. We will be having that meeting. We have, at this time, four regions who have let me know they wish to submit proposals to have a Mutt Strut in their area. One of those regions, in addition, last year we had three, is San Diego. And how fitting that we're in San Diego now at this convention. So the regions who have let me know they wish to submit proposals are Sacramento, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and San Diego. So just letting everyone know, those proposals are due November 30th so that the board can review and make their decision. Yeah, Roger is saying we may sponsor. We may find other sponsors, and we shall see. The board, all board members have committed, again, leading by example, to have a fundraising page for raising funds regarding the Mutt Strut. Again, leading by example. If anyone needs any assistance in putting one of those pages together, Ed Branch has offered assistance, and there are other people as well who could provide assistance. I shared that all board members are chairing committees. All board members will participate in a strategic plan that we hope to be able to work toward the implementing process next year. It is my goal to have the final meeting of the strategic plan group around the spring convention of next year. Again, CCB is in challenging times. The state is in challenging times. And so it is my belief that it is fitting to have this strategic plan now, because it will assist us in gaining focus, giving us direction. And it is my goal that in this strategic plan, whatever entity the board chooses to do the plan with us, they will be speaking with stakeholders. I think it's very important in creating a solid plan that the membership, the board, possibly some of our partners that are outside of the organization will be contacted. So that is another one of the things that we will be working on, hopefully to begin implementation in 2013. CCB had an office move this year. We're still in Sacramento. We moved just a few blocks down. Our new address is 1313 J Street. 1303. And Gene just said 1301. Oh, he said three. Okay. 1313. What am I thinking of? 1303 J Street. Suite 400. The office, since we've moved into that office in August, Ed has had several walk-ins. People have come to the office asking about CCB, asking about resources, asking about our services, asking about chapters, information and referral. To my knowledge, I don't think we've had walk-ins in a number of years. And of course, if I'm wrong, I know a lot of people in this room will correct me. The office is conducive to volunteers, to having volunteers. We are still doing some unpacking. But we have already had volunteers come to the office and assist, in other words, in preparation for Mutt-Strutt Sacramento. We have area for volunteers. It's a very welcoming building. And again, I'm very pleased because CCB is getting some good visibility there. So that is another thing that we have worked on. The thing that has helped CCB also is that we have been able to keep bring back a donor, who gave to CCB in the past, and they have given us commitment that they will continue to support CCB and scholarships. So that is a positive as well. Some of the things that CCB has worked on in these past months are through Linda Dardarian and Lainey Feingold. We all know them. Yes, we do. They wanted to wish us a very successful conference and convention, and I wish to share some good news with you, if some have not heard. In structured negotiations, CCB, well, regarding audio description, in September of this past year, CCB and several blind individuals here in the state of California completed a successful, structured negotiations with the Cinemark movie theater chain. Yes. As a result of the negotiations, the company announced that every auditorium in every first run Cinemark's theater in the United States would install audio description equipment. That is another example of what CCB has worked on with our partners to make life for people in California who are blind and visually impaired a good quality life. We enjoy movies too. Yes, we do. So that is one of the structured negotiations cases that has been successful. Access to prescription information. CCB continues to be involved with several national pharmacy chains in an ongoing effort to make prescription information accessible to people with visual impairments. Walmart has already begun offering Script Talk to people across the country through mail order and in select stores. Several California stores will be added shortly. CCB is also actively engaged with CVS, Walgreens, Rite Aid, and Target on the issue of accessible prescription information. Kaiser access to medical services and information. Linda Dardarian is co-counseling with disability rights advocates in structured negotiations on behalf of CCB and others on issues including web accessibility, alternative formats for printed materials, inaccessible paths of travel, inconsistent provision of talking prescriptions, inaccessible patient information kiosks, other communications and equipment access issues, and of course, inadequate staff training. that seems to be something that we deal with in an ongoing basis. But we continue to educate and advocate because we know that as we persevere, we are able to continue to move forward in challenging times to make barrier removal a reality. Now, CCB has also, with major MLB website accessibility, in 2012, CCB, ACB, and the Bay State Council of the Blind continues to participate with Major League Baseball in their ongoing works to ensure accessibility of MLB.com and all Major League Baseball team websites. In early June, MLB issued a press release announcing the accessibility of its applications for the iPhone and iPad. I've had a number of members call me saying, oh, we love that accessible iPad app. So that is also because of the work of the council working with our partners, Lainey and Linda. We're very strong in access. We enjoy access to things like Major League Baseball and movies, etc. We are definitely well-rounded people of balance. We work hard, we play hard, and we advocate for access. And of course, we continue to advocate for accessible point of sale machines. Gradually, we are seeing more, and in some places, we aren't quite seeing as many. We're fortunate here in California because the law is on our side when it comes to point of sale machines, so that we don't have to give our PIN number to a stranger so that we can have access and shop and buy what it is that we need. We advocate for accessible point of sale machines. What I would like to conclude with at this point is to again encourage you to look or call and find out about the various committees and let us know where you want to serve. Because it is you, the people power, that will allow CCB to continue being what it has been since its founding, what it continues to be now, and a force to be reckoned with in the future. What I plan on doing at this point is I'd like to open it up for any questions. If anyone has any questions whatsoever, please stand. And Ed will come to you with the mic. And if I don't have the answer, I know I have some of my officers here as well, especially my treasurer. I knew you were over there.
Donna?
Yes.
I have a question regarding the DVS. You said that they're going to be in theaters. Will you be releasing on the CB website the list of theaters?
Yes, I will put that in the California Connection. And I will go ahead and publish it on the listservs as well for the Cinemark. There is a theater, actually, Mary Lou in Culver City. And there are others around as well, and there are a number of them in Northern California as well. So I will put the list out on the connection, and I will put it on the listservs.
Donna?
Roger.
I just want to make a comment that all the structured negotiation stuff that we're doing, by the way, I signed a thing to Laney and Linda the other day, our cute and cuddly legal counsel. Anyway.
Okay.
This is something that's really changing the world, because you can't, I understand that a bank or anybody can't buy an ATM machine that doesn't have speech capability. They don't make them anymore. And I just examined the ATM in this hotel, and I think this is the first time that I've ever walked up to an ATM and found it to be an accessible ATM.
Yes, yes.
Without any action on our part, you know, just because that's the way they do it now.
Yes. I was very pleased to find that as well. Any other questions?
One more.
Hi, Donna. This is Lisa from San Diego. And this is, I guess, more of a statement with regard to Kaiser and Kaiser Access.
Yes.
I have a long history of doing work with Kaiser in terms of getting things accessible, and I would love to connect with the people in Northern California so Kaiser can't place against each other. And that also includes most recently, and I'm happy to give you the information I have. I've been working with someone down here in Kaiser on making their POS accessible, and I'd like to connect with Northern California again so they can't place against each other.
If you can give me your contact info, either at the end of the session, because I don't want to ask you for it right now in the middle of the session, but I'd like to connect you with folks as you stated. But if I could get your contact information, that would be great. Please. Any other questions?
Okay, I have a question.
And this is
Linda Amati.
Linda, hi.
The movie thing is great. I think it's wonderful. But I'm wondering what happened to TV descriptive. I have not been able to receive TV descriptive. I don't know what's wrong, but it's not coming through. And I just wondered if anybody else was receiving it, especially on CBS. They were doing several programs at one time. Mm-hmm. CSI was described. Mm-hmm. Criminal Minds was described.
Mm-hmm.
There were others that I can't think of right off the top of my head, but those two particularly were described. And there's been nothing on that. I'm just curious.
What I would like to say in brief is the Washington Connection, if you could call, it's an 800 number, and I'm not memorizing it right now, but I bet a number of people in this room know it. 1-800-424-8666. Okay. Okay. And what I was going to, and that's okay. What I was going to say is it depends on a number of factors. Your cable company, your box, your signal. There are a number of different factors that could come into play, because some people are receiving it still, and others are not. What I would encourage you to do as well is to, and again, contact Joel Snyder with the ACB Audio Description Project, and he would also be able to assist you and answer a number of your questions more in detail. But it may have to do with a number of factors because there are people who are still getting it, and it may be your cable company. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Madam President?
Okay. See Ken afterward as well, and he's worked on some of those things too. So thank you. Who asks for the floor?
Donna, it's Richard.
Richard.
I commend you, Madam President, for taking what could be hours of your time to essentially take what's on Cinemark.com and put it on the connection. I might advocate that since it's maybe part of the agreement that they go to Cinemark.com and patronize the website to find out what's playing near them. And yes. I've also found through my experience by calling the local Cinemark theater, they'll tell you what's playing and what's described at the first run theater. So that might save you hours and hours of time of having to kind of dredge that up. That's just my suggestion.
That would be a good thing as well, but I'm also thinking of folks, and the reason I mentioned parts of it for the connection is because, you know, some folks don't have the web access.
Sure.
But I definitely do encourage that folks call theaters because,
yes,
you know, it's great that we gain all of this access, but we have to call them and use it and let them know, hey, we're out here, we use it, we need it, we love it. So thank you, Richard.
And one last thing I might suggest is when I've patronized them and I've had good experiences too, I've let them know,
yes,
that so they're proud of what they've done too. Thank you.
Thank you. One more question.
Okay, one more.
It was more a, hi, this is Debbie Kessler. It was more a statement than a question, Donna. To follow up again on the Cinemark thing, if you call a theater and you run into the manager even or other employees who do not know which movies are being described, the projectionist always knows. That's all.
Okay. Thank you. I am going to now give the microphone back over to Jean, and let me hand it over. And again, we have a lot more convention to go, so everyone continue to enjoy. Here's Jean.
Thank you, Donna. Not knowing, hopefully everyone will be here tomorrow and the rest of the convention, conference and convention, but just in case people are just come hearing just for the day and evening, I want to just give a little reminder about our future conference and conventions. Let's just take a minute. Our spring conference and convention is going to be in Sacramento, the Arden Wells Hilton, where we've gone previously. And that is going to be April 11th through the 14th, and that's for 2013. We're also going to be coming back, doing a couple things at the same time. We're going to be coming back to this hotel next fall. And that will be through October 16th through the 20th. That's for next fall, 2013. And then our last contract right now, and that is in spring of 2014, we will be going back to Sacramento, and that will be April 10th through the 13th. Now, yes, at Arden West. Both times when we go to the Arden West, The all-inclusive room rate will be $95. Next, when we come here again, it will be incredibly, but it's going to be the same price, $100 all-inclusive. This is due to Elaine Cotty, our conference direct the representative who has been working with us very closely, getting these contracts. We really, really have knocked these down. I mean, the first time we got a bid on this thing, it would have been this time $129. And she got us a rate of 100. So we're asking you, please start saving your funds and give us ideas as to what things you'd like in the next three conventions. And I'm hoping, and this is the last thing, from the persons with low vision, we hope to to get feedback afterwards, but we're hoping the incandescent lighting in these rooms is working for you, and also the contrasting of the table covers. They're black, and the china is white, and we're hoping that providing more contrast is in that area, and also in the exhibit rooms, particularly with handouts and things, is helping you too. So that is, I take it, that's a positive. Okay, thank you, and we need to get to learn the things that you do or do not like. Now, we are going to move into the last item of the agenda. I know we're all eager, and I guess more eager to go to hospitality afterwards, which is in the great room right across from the elevators. But we're going to deal with elections right now, and we got certain offices. The first office, I'm going to conduct the election for that position, and then afterwards I will turn it over to Donna. So the nominating committee recommended Donna Pomerantz as president of CCB. Nominations from the floor are open. Are there any nominations for the floor for position of president? Are there any nominations from the floor for the position of president? And this is the last time I'm going to ask if there is any nominations from the floor for president. We're getting certain motions. We got multiple motions. I think generally everyone has asked for closing and us nominating Donna. And those in favor say aye. Nays, abstentions, congratulations. And it gives me great pleasure to turn over the mic to Donna Pomerantz.
Thank you, everyone. I already gave a speech, so I will just say thank you so much. And it takes each and every one of us to make CCB what we are. So I will be calling you, and you know you can call or email me. Thank you. The next position that is up for election is the position of vice president. The nominating committee put forth the name of Eugene Lozano Jr. And I will now open any nominations from the floor. Are there any nominations from the floor? Third and final time, are there any nominations from the floor? Okay. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Jean is elected.
I wish to thank you for giving me this honor of representing you for another 2 years as your first vice president. And please feel free at any time to contact me. And if there's any way I can be of assistance or to give me ideas of things that we can do. So again, thank you very much.
Okay, the nominating committee brought forth the name of Peter Pardini for the office of treasurer. And I wish to ask to open it up from the floor. Are there any nominations from the floor? Are there any other nominations from the floor? Third and final time, are there any other nominations from the floor? Moved and seconded and elected by acclamation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Congratulations, Peter. If we can get a mic over to Peter. Oh, you have one. Maybe you need to wish Peter condolences because, you know...
Thank you all very much for electing me by acclamation. I really appreciate this honor. And I will continue to work very hard for the California Council of the Blind as your treasurer. And again, if anybody wants copies of any treasurer's reports, please contact myself or the CCB office. So I'd really... I'm honored by your vote of confidence.
Yay!
I do want to put another plug in. We do have meal tickets available.
Give him the hook. Go ahead.
For the meals tomorrow.
Yes.
And raffle and sweepstakes tickets.
The new name I gave him in the... President's dinner was Guido Pardini. Guido. Okay. Thank you, Peter. The nominating committee brought forward the name of Vince Calderon for a director position. I open up nominations from the floor. Are there any other nominations from the floor? Are there any other nominations from the floor? Third and final time, are there any other nominations from the floor? And? Voted by acclamation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Congratulations, Vince.
Mary Lou's been on me to keep saying something all the time. I don't have to, but I thank you very much. I'm back for another term, and I will do my best, and I will do the best I can to serve as committee chair. And so anything else I can do, I'm going to do it. So thank you very much.
Yay! And I'd like to share with you that Vince Calderon has agreed to be our chair of the Finance and Budget Committee. So Vince and Peter will be working a lot together. The nominating committee brings forward the name of Lena Dawes for the position of director. And I would like to open it up. Are there any nominations from the floor? She is currently a director, and she is running for her second term. Oh, I apologize. Are you hyphenating, Lena? Or are you? Okay, she's not. Okay. Are there any nominations from the floor? Are there any nominations from the floor? Third and final time. Are there any other nominations from the floor? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I am very excited to serve my second term and sort of a new, you know, continuing this chapter, but sort of a new chapter for me is I have finished my term as student president. And I thank you for this opportunity to continue. And I too will make a plug. We do have raffle tickets that the students are selling.
Yay! Thank you. I have a bunch of plans for Lena, so. But she's on board. Yay. All right. The nominating committee brings forward the name of David Hanlon for the position of director. David is running for his second term. And I'll open it up. Are there any nominations from the floor? Okay, there is a nomination from the floor for Charles Navarrete for the position of director. Charles, do you accept that nomination?
Yes, microphone.
Charles said he does. Are there any other nominations from the floor? Third time, are there any nominations from the floor? Okay. Nominations are closed. We have, from the floor, okay, so for this election, apologies here, we have David Hanlon. First, does everyone have their badges? Badges. Ballots only go to people with badges that have orange dots on them. We'll be passing. Oh, didn't take a vote on closing nominations. Thank you, Bernice. Seconded the motion. All those in favor of closing nominations signify by saying aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Okay. What I would like to ask is if David Hanlon has speakers to speak on his behalf. Okay. David, who will your speakers be? Doug Martin from San Diego and Roger Peterson. Okay. And Charles, do you have speakers?
Yes.
Who will your speakers be? Teddy Joy Remhild. And Charles is going to speak as well. Okay. No, I didn't. Oh, okay. The question came out, how many more director positions? We have one more after this. Okay. And folks want to know who it is? Or can we go ahead and do this first? Thank you. At baby steps. Okay. Now, for David Hanlon, and we're going to give you 3 minutes in total for your speakers, so you'll need to divide up that time. And do we have a microphone?
Yes, I have.
To Doug Martin. Okay, Doug, I will tell you when to start. And again, 3 minutes to be split. Can somebody turn off their phone, please? Thank you. Okay. Okay, we'll go ahead and have your speaker start. Doug, please.
Hello, I am very honored to recommend David Hanlon for another term as director. David is president of the Randolph Shepherd Vendors. Dave has been a vendor for, oh Lord, I don't know, close to 30 years. When I was working at the Naval Ocean System Center back in the mid-90s, I used to buy things from him, and I still owe him for a muffin. but David has been extremely active in our San Diego chapter. He is the first board member from our chapter in many years, and we are extremely grateful to have him. He has generously provided all the things we needed for many of our local fundraisers, and he has provided leadership in planning. He has an absolutely wonderful business sense, which not many of the blind people around here, frankly, do. He's provided excellent leadership at our chapter meetings.
2 minutes.
And has provided excellent leadership in his first term. And I'm very pleased to recommend David Hanlon for another term. Thank you.
Roger?
So David Hanlon is running for his second term. He not only represents Randolph Shepherd Vendors, as Doug mentioned, but he's also significantly hearing impaired and is chair of the hearing impaired, visually impaired, or whatever it's called, committee that we have. I don't know whether we quite said
one minute
the title or not, but anyway, he's chair of that, and I serve with him on that committee, and we're really trying to make the convention more accessible to people, to blind people, visually impaired people who have significant hearing impairments. So I think that issue also needs to be represented on the board, and I support the continued service of Dave Hanlon on the board. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Does Teddy Joy Remhild have a mic?
No.
Not yet. Okay.
Thank you so much. I am really pleased to tonight to speak to you in support of Charles Navarrete for the position of board member for CCB. I've been a member, and I've known Charles for the past 20 years. Charles has a distinguished resume and record of service to the blind community for many more of those years, many more than those years. And he's been a member for 15 years of the Blind Advisory Committee, and for several of those years he chaired that committee. He also has been a board member on the CCB, and in the late 90s, 97, 98, he was the first vice president of the CCB. And Charles also is very distinguished in that his professional resume is that of an administrative law judge, and has done a lot of work in the Governmental Affairs Committee, and I've served with him on that. Charles brings a lot to our board of directors in academic and legal and professional skills and abilities, and I really hope you will support his election to the board of directors tonight. Thank you.
One minute.
I just wanted to briefly respond to a question I've been asked, why I stopped running after serving as first vice president. The immediate reason was because I had surgery to remove tumors in mid-1999. And after that, I had other surgeries, including to repair a tear in my eyeball. I also made some choices that affected my family and caused them a lot of pain, especially my youngest daughter, who has a psychological condition. And so I decided in 2001 to try to heal that, and that took several years. And
30 seconds.
And also, you know, I suffered from depression condition, and after, you know, 2000, I really was in depressed condition, which robbed me of energy and initiative. So I'm prepared to participate in the leadership of CCB and contribute. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have, thank you very much. We have our volunteers who will be passing out ballots, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong. The incumbent, or the person brought forward by the nominating committee, is David Hanlon. When you receive your ballot, if you choose to vote for David Hanlon, do not tear it, leave it whole. If you choose to vote for Charles Navarrete, you will tear one corner of your ballot. If you choose to vote for David Hanlon, leave your ballot as it is. If you choose to vote for Charles Navarrete, tear off one corner. And remember, ballots only go to people who have orange dots. I can't see them, but you can. Okay. And of course, Roller Skates Ed is running around passing out ballots. So
you are alive, though.
Oh, Jeff is moving to abolish secret ballots. Wow. Who did that? You know, maybe a guide dog got to it. Does everyone have a whole ballot without a corner torn off so that you could make your decision? Mitch says no. His ballot
has a corner torn off of it, so Mitch needs a whole ballot. Ay, 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 the things they're going to say about California. Okay, loud guy, do you have a whole ballot now? Are all the ballots? Let's see. So is this why, is this a voting security issue maybe? Voter fraud, somebody said. Okay. All right. Now, folks, they're collecting ballots. And what I'd like to do is... Actually, what I'd like to do very quickly, because I gave our credentials chair a surprise, so I'm giving her time to get things ready here. But I'd like to go ahead and do a... Oh, is Ed around or no?
I'm here.
I'd like to go ahead and do a door prize. Our folks love door prizes. But the door prize we're going to do is going to surprise Ed, because he doesn't have to go run to get a door prize. We had a donation from a member for the membership breakfast. So, I'm going to pick a name. Oh, and those breakfasts are good. Oh, chef is so delicious. Okay. Patricia Gould? Are you in the room? No, she's not in the room. Okay, for the membership breakfast. Phil Obregon, are you in the room? Okay, he's not here. Okay. Okay. Vicky Parker, are you in the room? Yay, Vicky! Yay, Vicky! She gets a ticket to the membership breakfast. Yay! Okay. Okay. All righty. Thank you. Well, Vicky, you can't leave the room because Ed, he went away. Okay. What we're going to do is I'm going to give the microphone over to our credentials chair so that she can call the chapters and affiliates so we can get that vote. So I'm going to give it over to you.
Okay, do you guys need me to read the chapters that are not seated, or do you have that? Okay. Okay. Okie dokie. ACB Capital Chapter. You just want me to read the delegates, or? Delegate Jeff Tom, alternate Linda O'Neill, 44 members, 9 votes. You want me to repeat it, or?
Here's a live mic, too.
Is it wired or wireless?
Wireless.
Come up to the front, everybody. I'm up here in the front, by the way, for those who come after me. It's Capital Chapter cast 3 votes for Hanlon, 6 votes for Navarrete.
Okay, 3 votes Hanlon, 6 votes Navarrete. Okay, Active Wine, excuse me, Inland Valleys Chapter, Delegate Irene Nunez, Alternate Nellie Emerson, 14 members, 5 votes, sorry.
3 votes, Hanlon, 2, Navarrete.
Okay. Alameda County Chapter, Delegate Katrina McCurdy, no alternate, 12 members, 5 votes.
Three votes, Hanlon, 2 votes, Navarrete.
Okay, Association for Multicultural Concerns.
5 votes, Charles Navarrete.
5 votes, Charles
Navarrete. Okay. Bayview Chapter. 9 votes.
9 votes for Charles Navarrete.
Okay. Braille Revival League. 5 votes. 5 votes. Delegate is Keith Johnson. No alternate. Okay. California Council of Blind Students. 5 votes.
Two votes, Hanlon, 3, Navarrete.
California Council Citizens with Low Vision, 5 votes.
Four votes, Navarrete, and 1 vote, Hanlon.
Okay. California Library Users of California, 5 votes. Sorry.
2.5 Hanlon, 2.5
Compton Chapter.
5 votes.
Yeah, 10 votes. Okay.
5 votes Hamlet, 5 votes Navarrete.
Contra Costa Chapter, 5 votes.
2 votes Hamlet, 3 votes Navarrete.
You need to do it on the mic.
Okay. East Los Angeles Chapter.
Did you get the Contra Costa Chapter vote? They were bringing me the mic, sorry.
Sorry.
2 votes, Contra Costa was 2 votes Hanlon, 3 votes Navarrete.
Okay, East Los Angeles Chapter, 7 votes.
7 votes for Charles
Navarrete.
Just a minute. Glendale Burbank Chapter, 6 votes. Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought he did.
East Los Angeles will give 7 votes to Charles Navarrete.
Okay, Glendale Burbank, 6 votes.
Five votes Hanlon, 1 vote Navarrete.
Okay, Golden Gate chapter, 5 votes. Delegate Warren Cushman. Okay, thank you.
5 votes, okay. Navarrete.
Did we get that one or not? Okay. Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind, 5 votes.
Greater Bakersfield, 5 votes Hanlon.
Okay, Greater Long Beach chapter, 5 votes.
Two votes Hanlon, 3 votes Navarrete.
Greater Los Angeles chapter, 5 votes.
No one's raising their hand.
Are they here?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can't see you.
Okay.
Hush.
3 Navarrete, 2 Hanlon.
Okay, Guide Dog Users of California, 5 votes.
No hands.
Ken, you're the delegate.
Yeah, I'm here. Okay, 3 Hanlon, 2 Navarrete.
Orange County chapter, 5 votes.
I'm sorry. Orange County votes, 5 Hanlon.
Orientation Center for the Blind, 5 votes.
Two votes Hanlon, 3 votes Navarrete.
Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California, 5 votes.
All 5 votes for me.
That was spoken with true conviction. Okay. Redwood Empire Council chapter, 10 votes.
Hanlon.
Okay, San Bernardino chapter, 14 votes.
San Bernardino chapter, 14 votes. Hanlon.
San Diego Braille Club chapter, 8 votes.
All 8 votes, David Hanlon.
Okay. San Diego chapter, 5 votes. Come on, hold on.
San Diego chapter votes, 5 votes, Hanlon.
San Francisco chapter, 7 votes.
Uh,
I'll help to even out the score with my friend Judy Wilkinson. I'm going to cast 3.5 for Hanlon and 3.5 for Navarrete.
Okay, Gabriel Valley chapter, 10 votes.
2 votes Hanlon, 8 votes Navarrete.
Silicon Valley chapter, 100 members, 20 votes.
Silicon Valley Council of the Blind, pardon me, all choked up. Yes, 10 votes for Hanlon and 10 votes for Navarrete.
Yosemite Gateway chapter, 5 votes.
5 votes, Hanlon.
And that concludes the chapters who are seated.
Okay, thank you very much. And our treasurer is tallying up the votes. While our treasurer is tallying up the votes, a door prize, yes. See, the membership tells me what to do and I do it. Oh. You know, babe, do you think we're at home? Remember, we're going to the room together tonight.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. What my mom says to my father is, remember, Cordero, you still have to come home tonight. Okay. Door prize. We have a trailside goodie box and a bag of fudge from Alameda and another membership breakfast ticket donated.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. And let's have Jean draw the winning ticket. Terry Olmey, are you in the room? Terry Olmey is not in the room. Let's pick another name. Ah, torn corner one. Lisa Irving, are you in the room? Yay! All right. Great. Congratulations. Fudge, goodie box. And free breakfast. Okay. And our treasurer is still counting up the votes, so why don't we do another door prize? Yes. Uh-oh. No, that was not Ed. He's okay. All righty. As soon as Ed's a set of plastic serving trays and a bag of fudge. And these plastic, I want these plastic serving trays. Ooh, they're cool. Okay. We're going to go ahead and have, okay, we're going to have Pam Pology draw the name, and after we get a winner, Peter has the vote. Bob Rennie, are you in the room? Yay! Okay. All righty. So, I know there were two mics, but I'm going to get up and give Peter mine. See, I share.
Um,
David Hanlon, 172. Charles Navarrete, 111.
Okay, where is the... Oh. Okay. David, if we're getting a mic over to you. So David could say a few words.
Boy, it did count to vote for myself, huh? Anyway, thank you all very much. One of my goals is to try to get a better equipment for our audio listening device system. And I've been extremely frustrated the last couple of years trying to get the various Lion Clubs to help out. So with the help of Lee Morton and the San Diego chapter and my committee, I hope to really attain that goal. So thanks for giving me another chance so that I can try to complete this goal.
Okay. Charles, did you wish to say a few words?
Well, thank you all who voted for me, and I'm sure David's going to continue to do good work. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. The nominating committee brings forward the name of David Jackson for the position of director, and he would be running for his fourth and final term. And David is not here. However, I believe it is proper for me to ask if there is anyone to speak on his behalf.
No, well, you don't know yet.
Oh. Yeah, I was just making sure. Okay, yes. Okay. So what I would like to do is open it up for any other nominations from the floor. Dan Kaiser is not here, and we don't know if he is interested, so I believe it's proper for that not to be accepted. Okay, cannot accept that. Okay, are there any other nominations from the floor?
Madam President?
Yes.
I'd like to nominate Charles Navarrete.
Third and final time, are there any other nominations from the floor? Okay. Okay. So we have... Oh, I'm sorry. See, I'm just wanting to jump to the other thing. Okay. Oh. Sorry. Are you okay, Gene? Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. We have a motion to accept. Oh, Charles, do you accept?
Yeah.
See, look, I was already telling you what to do. I didn't even ask you. Charles does accept. And we move that nominations be closed. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Thank you very much. Now, David Jackson, I heard Linda Perrell. Is there anyone else to speak for David Jackson? Linda, did he ask you to speak? He did. Okay. So, yes, we do have verification that David did ask Linda to speak on his behalf. Are there any other speakers for David, or is it Linda? Okay, hearing none. And help me out here for a second. Charles already had two speakers. He does not get, okay. Jeff is saying he has a right to. Okay, so Charles, who will speak for you then for this time? Or you can decline it.
In the interest of time, I'll decline. I've already had Teddy present very well for me, and thank you.
Thank you. Okay. All right. We will have 3 minutes for David Hanlon's speaker. Linda?
David Jackson.
David Jackson. I was, you know. That's what happens when I have no wine. Okay, speaker for David Jackson, Linda Perrell.
No.
Linda, do you have a microphone?
I have one now.
Perfect. Let's hear from Linda.
Thank you all very much. I rise tonight to speak for my good friend, David Jackson, who's running for his fourth term on the board. David humbly apologizes for his absence due primarily to financial concerns. But let me tell you a bit about David. First, I'll tell a personal story. I moved here in 2005 and came to the San Francisco chapter in September of that year, and David was one of the first people to greet me, and we have become fast friends and good baseball buddies. But that shows his deep commitment to the issue of membership. As a member of the membership committee, and even before he got officially involved with the membership committee, David helped to revive the struggling Alameda chapter, which might not exist if it hadn't been for some intervention by David and some good response by those members of that chapter who wanted to stay active. So that's one of his accomplishments. David is also a member of the BART Advisory Committee. I'm not sure the exact title of that, but transportation is a major concern of his.
2 minutes.
And I know that he has worked with Gene on those issues. He's been a member of CCB since 1985, and there's nobody with a bigger heart and more love for CCB than David. His commitment is deep, and he would like to continue to serve one more term on the board. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. So our volunteers are going to pass out the ballots. Yes. Our volunteers will. Okay, there. I'm. We're passing out the ballots. Okay, our volunteers are passing out the ballots. Okay. David Jackson was brought forward by the nominating committee, so you leave your ballot whole. If you are voting for David Jackson, you tear off one corner. If you are voting for Charles Navarrete, if you're voting for David Jackson, you leave the ballot whole, leave it as is. If you're voting for Charles Navarrete, you tear off one corner of your ballot. Okay. David Jackson. Oh, my. I don't even want to know. I don't even want to know. David Jackson, leave your ballot as it is. Charles Navarrete, tear off one corner. Okay, is there anyone who does not have a ballot?
Raise your hand if you don't have one.
Raise your hand if you don't have a ballot. There was a deodorant commercial. Raise your hand. Raise your hand if you're sure. It's late. Oy. David Jackson, leave your ballot as is. Charles Navarrete, tear off that corner. And I didn't hear anybody yell, hey, my corner was already torn off, so I guess we fixed that security issue.
Either that or he was going to tear it off anyway.
Yes, I did. Yes. Okay, folks are going to start collecting the ballots. And everybody's running around collecting ballots, so I'm not taking the delegate vote. What I would do is I would ask folks to stand up and get to the center aisle in preparation for giving your chapter vote when our credentials chair calls your chapter or affiliate. So, wow, Jeff's right there, front and center. Again, everyone, all delegates, come to the center aisle. And are you guys ready to run mics? Okay, I'm going to give the microphone, folks. Hello. I will sing again, I promise. Ooh, the room got quiet. Okay. All right, folks. Now, I'm going to give the microphone over to our credentials chair so that she can go ahead and call the roll of the chapters.
I have a mic, yes. Thank you. Okay. ACB, capital chapter, 9 votes.
9 votes, Navarrete.
Okay. Active Wine, Inland Valleys chapter, 5 votes. You need a mic.
It's for the recording, and that's the reason, and for the people on ALDs.
Active Blind, 5 votes, Navarrete.
Okay, Alameda County, chapter, 5 votes.
5 votes for David Jackson.
Okay. Association for Multicultural Concerns, 5 votes.
AMC votes, 5 votes for Charles Navarrete.
Bayview chapter, 9 votes.
5 votes
Navarrete, 4 votes, Jackson.
Rail Revival League of California, 5 votes. California Council of Blind Students, 5 votes.
Where's the poll? Yeah. 2 votes, Jackson. 3, Navarrete.
California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, 5 votes.
4 votes, Navarrete, and 1 vote, Jackson.
California Library Users of California, 5 votes.
California Library Users cast its 5 votes for its longtime member, David Jackson.
Compton Chapter, 10 votes.
Compton Chapter, 5 votes apiece.
Contra Costa Chapter, 5 votes.
Contra Costa votes 5 votes for David Jackson.
East Los Angeles Chapter, 7 votes.
Mike is coming.
You can't. You have to wait for the mic.
Ed's coming.
7 votes, Charles Navarrete.
Glendale Burbank Chapter, 6 votes.
Who's there?
4 votes, Navarrete.
Okay.
2 votes, Jackson.
Okay. Golden Gate Chapter, 5 votes.
Five votes, Navarrete.
Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind, 5 votes.
5 votes, Jackson.
Greater Long Beach Chapter, 5 votes.
Five votes, Jackson.
Greater Los Angeles Chapter, 5 votes.
Okay. 3 Navarrete and 2 Jackson.
Okay, Guide Dog Users of California, 5 votes. You gotta wait for the mic.
Okay, I'm sorry, microphone. Okay. Guide Dog Users of California gives its 5 votes to its great board member, David Jackson.
Orange County Chapter, 5 votes.
Orange County votes 4 votes for Jackson, 1 vote for Navarrete.
Orientation Center for the Blind Alumni Association, 5 votes.
2 votes, Jackson, 3 votes, Navarrete.
Randolph Chevron Vendors of California, 5 votes.
5 votes for David Jackson.
Okay. Redwood Empire Council Chapter, 10 votes.
Ten votes for David Jackson.
San Bernardino Chapter, 14 votes.
14 votes, Charles Navarrete.
San Diego Braille Club Chapter, 8 votes.
8 votes, Jackson.
San Diego Chapter, 5 votes.
Ed cannot run for office. I'm just teasing.
San Diego Chapter gives his 5 votes to David Jackson.
San Francisco chapter, 7 votes.
San Francisco, home of the broom-carrying World Series champion, San Francisco Giants, cast 7 votes for our native son, David Jackson.
San Gabriel Valley chapter, 10 votes. Silicon Valley chapter, 20 votes. Silicon. It's a long night, you guys.
Silicon Valley votes, 12 votes for Jackson and 8 for Navarrete.
Well, I won't mispronounce this. Yosemite Gateway chapter, 5 votes.
Yosemite Gateway votes, 5 votes, David Jackson.
And that concludes the chapter accounts.
Okay, thank you. And while Peter is tallying up the votes, I know I heard the call of the wild, the door prize, the wild door prize people. That's what I can say. The CCB call of the wild is door prize. Okay, Ed went over to the chair. He's getting a door prize. Okay, we have a ticket for the membership breakfast tomorrow. And we have a case of Hot Weaver microwave popcorn, 24 bags. Oh, I love it. Let's have our credentials chair draw. Ooh, popcorn. Ooh, membership breakfast. Andy Baracco, are you in the room? No. Andy Baracco, you won. Yay! All right. Ah, oh, that popcorn. Mm-mm-mm. Okay, I hear our treasurer. I think he said, I have, oh. Peter has the votes. But he needs a microphone, and I'm wired over here, so I can't move. Ah, here comes Ed. Mr. Treasurer, please give us the votes.
Jackson, 144 votes. Navarrete, 134 votes. Jackson's the winner. Wow.
Okay, thank you very, very much. And I would, sorry. I hear talking in the back. Ken's pretty loud. I think we'll need to put him outside. All right. I want to thank everybody who Charles, yes. We're going to give Charles a mic.
I'd like to apologize for making it a long night. And I may have quoted Richard Nixon, but I don't feel that way. I'm going to continue to work with CCB and help the council become successful. Thank you for voting.
Thank you very, very much. And Charles, I know where to find you. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody who ran tonight. And Charles, thank you for continuing to support CCB. Let us go ahead and call this meeting, this general session, adjourned. Thank you so much. We'll see you tomorrow.